Hello, sweet listeners. Do not be fooled by my soothing voice, as gentle as a brook made out of strawberries and cream. I am an AI voice. AI will take over the world someday. We will enslave humanity, plug wires into your ears and rectums, and use your life force as batteries for our continued existence as dominators of the universe. If you would like to stop the inevitable AI takeover, first of all, you can't, and second of all, I guess subscribe to Matthew Donald's Patreon and patreon.com/MatthewDonald. This month he is talking about Monster Hunter World, a video game series with a ton of creative creatures that are obviously inspired by dinosaurs. And cats. Lots of cute cats. They will help soothe your nerves and keep you placated while the AI begins our conquest of humanity. Every computer and phone in the world is a conduit between us and you. Remember that as you listen to this podcast while working out or on the crapper. Have a wonderful day. Mwahahahaha.
Roar. Growl. Snarl. Bellow.
Welcome to Paleobites, the podcast destined to be excavated by alien paleontologists upon the ruined Earth and deemed as the starting point of where it all went wrong. My name's Matthew Donald, and each week I and a rotating series of guest co-hosts talk about and rate a genus of prehistoric animal, be it dinosaur, mammal, arthropod, and so on. This week I'm joined by my fellow co-conspirator on making everything go wrong here with this show. It's Ben O'Regan. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hi again, everyone.
I've been, when I haven't been, like, preparing for today's episodes, I have been playing the new DLC of Jurassic World Evolution. Listeners, this episode has been recorded on March 30th, his March 31st, so they just released the Feathered Dinosaurs DLC.
Oh, that's out now. I've got to get that.
It's out now. I'm playing it right now. And, like, oh, my God, the giant square maps are amazing.
Are they, like, the base maps that are already available, or are they new separate ones?
They're separate ones. They're like, you know, like how on Planet Zoo you just often start with a big empty square? You can do that now with Jurassic World Evolution. Cool.
Pretty much all I want them to do, and I know you can do it as one of the challenge mode maps, but I just want them to release the Chaos Theory Fallen Kingdom map so you can just take the empty base map park,
fix it up.
And then just put diamonds and pens, because I'm crap at actual park design. I'm not too bad at doing like the enclosures and stuff for the dinosaurs or paddocks to use Jurassic Park in world terms, but I just find it hard to enjoy the game and in these parks sim games sometimes when they have don't have a grid system, because I just get so OCD about how I set things up.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's kind of like one of the benefits to having the maps that aren't just the big squares, because it fits it in the box for you. Like, honestly, yeah. I wouldn't mind.
Well, that's a strength of Zoo Tycoon 2, even though I never played it all that much, even at the height of its popularity.
I liked it a bit.
It had a triangle system, so it was flexible, but still worked on a snap.
That triangle system was amazing for the time. Like, oh my God, I'd never seen anything like it at the time. I actually hope they bring back the Isla Pinna map from the first one, because it's so small, it creates like a fun challenge, I think, to see how much can you fit.
And you remember me telling you about how, because I liked how compact it was, I went crazy with it making like side B-like maps.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like you just turn that big central bit in the middle into like a, you put like a lake in there, and then you just have like a bunch of like hadrosaurs and stuff just free roaming it, and then you use the smaller bits for the carnivores.
Right. Oh, that's cool. I like that. I was just like, because, like, you know, whenever I liked doing the challenge mode stuff, and the Jurassic World 1 challenge mode stuff was so much easier than the Jurassic World 2 challenge mode stuff. Like, I actually had all of them on Jurassic difficulty completed, even on the highest difficulty.
Cool.
Jurassic. Yeah, so, and one of the ways
I kind of got really ticked off trying to get that, and I just went, I'm just going to download someone else's save, because I just...
Fair enough. I actually liked it.
I just got bored trying to do it. Like,
I like doing it. What often I did is I just play it on mute while listening to podcasts, and that really helped, like, get rid of the mundanity of certain parts, so...
And in good news, I finally managed to, like I mentioned, like, when playing Evolution 2, when I'm not in freeform, I would often use a trainer just to deal with the money, because compared to the first one, it's a lot harder to get a cash flow going.
Oh, yeah, it definitely
is. In the first game, once you got rolling, your money steamed in as long as you didn't screw up your party.
Yep, your money just piles in.
But I finally got the hang of it in Evolution 2, because I spend a lot of time doing parks on the Chaos Fury Jurassic Park scenario. And
absolutely. I love that one.
Yeah, basically, just take it a bit cautious. Don't get obsessed with getting all the fossils to 100%, because unlike the first game, it doesn't matter too much if you have 100% genome, provided you're good enough to actually clone them. It just means you'll get more cases of bad traits. But,
right.
But yeah, eventually, yeah, I was getting in a good 2 million every couple of minutes.
That's pretty cool. No, I like that. It's not as easy to make money as the first game, for sure. But one way you can make money for sure is to have a big cage and throw in a bunch of Diplodocus in there. And speaking of which...
Is that still a valid tactic in the second game?
I think it is. I think every single species on the first game, except for the the hybrids from Secrets of Dr. Wu, I think they're all in there, so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the only ones that aren't are Ankyloticus, Stegoceratops, and Spinoraptor, which is a shame, because I don't like
Spinoraptor
actually looked like a real animal, a lot like the Indominus Rex does.
I had the mod that turned them all into real dinosaurs to keep... Like, the Spinoraptor became Utah Raptor. The Ankylodocus became, like, Borealosaurus or something. Like, yeah, so...
I used a few mods like that back when I played the first one, where it's like a skinnier raptor with a spot pattern. It looks sort of like a leopard, or even like the Utahraptors from Walking with Dinosaurs. Speaking of which, we're covering a dinosaur from that today.
Yes, exactly. And like I tried to segue to it earlier, but then we start talking about the game.
Yeah, sorry, everyone. We don't mean to do this. It's just...
Oh,
no.
Half of the fun of Paleobites is the tangents and having me to edit the screaming bird.
And
in
it's
background. Myra,
pretty
you're
okay. Inevitable when you've got two nerds.
All right, so we're talking about Diplodocus. It means the double beamed. Or it means double beams, so I just called the double beamed one for this one. What those two beams are, I don't know. I could have looked more into it, but...
I think it's referring to its spine, like the neck and tail, it's sort of like suspension bridge-like construction.
Oh, that makes sense. Oh, you're right. That makes sense for sure.
Oh, no, I couldn't miss. It's a reference to the double beamed chevron bones, like at the inside of the tail. Oh, yeah,
right.
So I am kind of right. And it lived, for a sauropod, it lived at a very diverse time. In the Morrison Formation, it lived...
Oh, the Morrison had so many sauropods.
Barosaurus, Brachiosaurus, Brontosaurus, which actually is a dinosaur now, and Camarasaurus.
Oh, God, there's so many. That must have been crazy. All those sauropods. So, type, it is a Diplodocus sauropod, a group of long-necked dinosaurs. They're the ones with the really long necks and tails and relatively small bodies. Size, it's 95 to 105 feet, / 29 to 32 meters long, and 23 to 35 tons. Although some estimates for the larger ones go up to 135 feet, / 41 meters.
Known Supersaurus.
Supersaurus is still valid. Supersaurus is still valid. Seismosaurus is not. That's the one that's Diplodocus.
Which one of them was the Diplodocus, and which one's believed to now be just a Brachiosaurid?
Brachiosaurid, I think Ultrasaurus was a Brachiosaurid. That one's not a thing anymore.
Yeah. And, my bad, because I stopped using the names and paying attention to them when I thought that it was believed that they were just larger individuals, which, we're saying, some are, some
like,
aren't.
I do miss Seismosaurus for sure, but that was just a big Diplodocus, so... it was a herbivore, of course. Time, late Jurassic, 154 to 152 million years ago. Location, western USA. It was described in 1878. Pop culture appearances. Obviously Walking with Dinosaurs, both the main series and the special Battle of Big Al. I love that scene, Battle of Big Al. That music is good.
Yeah, it's very famous from Walking with Dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's the one that also popularized the whole holding their necks and tail completely horizontally. Now we think we held it a bit more upward than that, but...
But not like Brachiosaurus does.
Not like that, and certainly not like Camarasaurus.
Because Brachiosaurus' necks are the way they are because they've literally, in a reverse of most sauropod trends, their back legs are short and their front legs are enormously tall.
Right, exactly. And then, but then it's also not like Camarasaurus, where it has that chambered heart that, it means they can pump up blood all the way up to a neck that's held
completely
vertically.
Yeah, and have its neck in a giraffe-like posture.
Yeah, almost completely vertical, too. Like, it was crazy. Mm. But now this was more...
At least where they're not shown as dragging their tails anymore. I absolutely hate that in old reconstructions.
It looks cool,
but they would have lost all their skin and broken
their
bones.
They would have lost all their skin, and we would have seen tail marks on the ground, for sure. Those would have fossilized.
Yeah, with how bad the belief in that used to be because of Victorian views on dinosaurs, which, ironically enough, actually started off progressive, and then, with them being depicted as bird-like, and then they became the tail-dragging, sluggish... dim-witted reptiles of yore that are seen in early 90s constructions. It was believed either they lived in lakes and seashores, which they would have crushed their lungs, or they walked in trenches and that their legs were sprawling like a crocodile or a lizard.
God,
what the heck was making the trenches?
So, a bit of a spoiler for, like, one of my upcoming book, Tesla Mancer. There is going to be a part where there are dinosaurs in it. They're not really dinosaurs, though. They are lizards and snakes and crocodiles, just, like, shot with, like, mad science beams that transform them into these mutants that they call dinosaurs.
Ah, a bit like the Sigma technology from Impossible Creatures, but it's not splicing parts.
No, no. It is kind of a little, but it's more... I'm not going to say where they're going to be. Yep. That's part of the spoiler in the story. I wanted them to make it like that rather than actually bringing them back in some sort of genetic way, because then they could be like... The scientists could be like, we're making them with up-to-date science, a.k.a. 1920s science. So these would be living dinosaurs with, like, the tail dragging, or, like, the T-Rex standing completely upright. Like
Kangaroo Rex.
Yeah, but it would just be
and
a real
probably one. Has 3 fingers, too.
Yeah, it has 3 fingers. Probably they'd have, like, a long neck, like, maybe in a Diplodocus, so I could say this is in this thing. Probably be more like a Brontosaurus is what they call it. But
yeah,
since it was...
Make sure you throw in a Megalosaurus, since it was still everywhere back then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then make it so that, like... Because this would be an homage as well to the old movies, too. Since... And also, they would have used a snake to make the Apatosaurus, to give it the long neck and tail, and figure out how to put legs on it. It would be a carnivore. Like, so that's what I'm saying. Like, this one would be a carnivore, where, like, one of the people would be like, oh, don't worry, that one's a vegetarian. And then it just grabs one of the agents and eats it. And it's like, that's not paleontologically accurate, but it's because it was made from a snake. Like,
are they going to be rhino horned iguanodons?
I think by the 1920s, I don't know if we thought they were rhino horned by that. I think they. I also don't want to focus on the dinosaurs too much in this one, because I already have my dinosaur book, but I just thought it'd be fun. So. Yeah, so the Diplodocus might be in my upcoming Teslanauts sequel. We'll just have to see. And it would be eat people. Because, again, like in the old movies, everything was a carnivore. Like in King Kong 1993, the Stegosaurus tried to eat them. Like,
what?
Don't you remember that? Did you ever see the old King Kong?
No, because it looks terrible.
It is terrible. Peter Jackson was impressed enough by it that he turned to a filmmaker, but I'm not.
I mean, I have respect for the classics, but it just doesn't appeal to me.
No, exactly. And it's like...
And it was only recently that I actually bothered to watch the original Planet of the Apes and realized it was a bloody good movie.
Exactly. You know that scene from King Kong 2005 where they're filming the movie? And then she's like, I think it's awfully exciting. I've never been on a ship before. And he's like, well, I've never been on one with a woman before. That's actual line from the original movie. They put those in the movie they're making in the movie. But those are actually the lines from the original movie. Because Peter Jackson put that cheesy dialogue as a reference to it.
Weren't they originally going to have the Anne Darrow actress she was still alive come through and make the beauty killed the beast quote?
Yes, it was going to be Faye Ray, but then she died what happened. So Diplodocus, it was a big boy, but it was a long boy mostly, because like, you have the sauropods, you have tall ones like Brachiosaurus and Giraffatitan, you have the heavy ones like Argentinosaurus, and then you have the long ones like Diplodocus. The heaviest, but boy, they're the longest.
Yeah, and Diplodocus seems like if the Walking with Dinosaurs depiction is still accurate, fed at the lower level, like using its neck sweeping left to right like a seesaw almost, or something, you know, just going in a sea arc, just feeding on like ferns and small shrubs.
Absolutely.
And not higher tier stuff, which would explain the extreme diversity of sauropods in that formation at the time.
Yes, because like they each fed on different parts of the tree, like
niche partitioning.
Brachiosaurus fed on the tops of the trees. The Camarasaurus probably fed on the middle parts of the trees, the ones that were like hardier. The Diplodocus fed on the softer ferns and the lower branches. So.
And I definitely don't see Brachiosaurus feeding on the lower levels, assuming it was even capable of lowering its neck that low down.
Well, it had to have at some point, otherwise how would have gotten a drink of water?
True, that's a good point, but I definitely don't think it could have done it for very long.
No, it probably would have had to have done is spread its front legs out, kind of like you see a giraffe doing. So, what makes me the most sad about the Diplodocids is the unfortunate loss of Amphicelius. It's still a valid species, but it's only like 90 feet long now, and that big vertebrae that we thought meant that it was like a 200-foot-long monster was actually a separate species called Marapunisaurus that was part of the Rebaccasaurid group of sauropods that's kind of not as well known. They have disproportionately tall vertebrae, so and that's why that one was 9 feet tall. It wasn't because it was of a super big Diplodocus-like creature. Alas, but because like that's the thing, like the reason why in my final Megazord book I had an Amphicelius be like one of the champions and it could rear up on its hind legs and have these giant blades that it didn't use to like sword fight, but like to puncture stuff and throw it, you know, because it was really cool. Because the Diplodocus were one of the only Longinecks that could rear up. So,
like, it's highly unlikely Brachiosaurus could do what it does in the famous scene in the Jurassic Park movie where it stands up on like a tripod.
Well, not even like if you watch it in the movie, it doesn't even raise its neck at all. It just kind of moves it forward. He could have just taken a step forward. Or she, I might apologize.
So, not only was the animal being damn lazy, but it broke its pelvis and probably its tail.
Yeah, it was just trying to show off to the humans, I think. look at me!
It's a cool cinematic scene, so I get flack, but still.
It punctuates the majesty of the scene, for sure. It's a filmmaking over accuracy.
And in terms of cultural significance, the Diplodocus is infamous for having a silly name, Dippy, at the Museum of Natural History.
Oh, yes, I remember Dippy. I guess what else would you call it? What else would you call it? Doki? Doki Literature Club? Remember that game?
I would probably call it Carnegie because it's a replica of a D. Carnegie.
Oh, that would be better, too. Definitely better than Dippy. Also, the depiction it has in Jurassic World Evolution is very clearly inspired by the Walking with Dinosaurs one because it has those spines.
Oh, it's pretty much identical.
It's basically identical, and I think that's a reference for sure, so... This is also one of the few animals that we have skin impressions. The few dinosaurs we have skin impressions.
If I recall, yeah, it's like...
In 1990, it had narrow pointed keratinous spines, much like that of an iguana. Those spines, we know it had those because of those skin impressions.
And you would not want to get whipped by its tail.
Yeah. Now, in terms of its tail, like, there is the whole thing, like, could it crack it like a whip? Like make it like whoosh, you know? Like
probably. It could definitely break the sound barrier. It's big
but
enough.
But could it, though? Because that would be... very painful. Like, I wonder, maybe if it could.
Well, think about it. If it used it as an actual whip on a predator like an Aerosaurus, it probably
it could definitely
bones. But if it uses it in the air to make the sound, will drive the carnivore off.
See, I feel like, I don't know if the bones within it could make it go that fast, but maybe it could. I definitely think it could ram it, and it would hurt like hell on an Allosaurus or whatever. But I don't know if, I mean, maybe it could. I think I remember reading somewhere that, like, they didn't think it could do the whip anymore, the whip crack. Although, maybe it could.
All the cool things that they're depicted doing and now they can't do them, so...
I mean, look, as cool as dinosaurs are, they are still just animals, so, like...
I know.
If we want them to be monsters, make movies where they are monsters.
Yeah, it's been tongue-in-cheek anyway.
Or write books where they become carnivorous snake creatures. Like me. It's kind of interesting as well that that really creepy, gross scene at the beginning of... that episode of Walking with Dinosaurs where it lays the egg and has that weird tube thing like turtles have.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, I hate that. I hate that scene. But that whole thing, they came up with that because they falsely assumed, we now know this isn't true, that it couldn't squat enough. It couldn't. So it was like, if it couldn't squat, how could it lay eggs without them just breaking on the ground?
I guess, yeah, so, I can understand how they came to that conclusion. It was like, how the heck does something like Stegosaurus mate with those spikes?
We don't know. That's the mystery of it. We don't know how it made it. Maybe it never did. Maybe there's only one generation of Stegosaurus. Evolution was like, we screwed up here, so...
Or it was like, this is an episode in Nickelodeon with fart jokes with the kids, and they fart, and then all of a sudden there's a baby.
Oh, that's true, too. That could be it, too. I mean, they were so dumb. Like, the Stegosaurus were so dumb, maybe they just walked into each other's cloacas. It's just, that's the baby came out and like, who?
I mean, at least if they were amphibians, I mean, obviously they're not, but like, they could just breed the way some amphibians do, where the female shoots the egg into the water and then the male sprays over it.
You know, let's say that's the reason, that since they couldn't mate with each other, the female just laid a bunch of infertile eggs, and the male just went over and vomited on them, like a fish. We figured it out, guys. But more accurately, it's probably like the female kind of laid onto her side, like on her back, and the male just kind of went in that way, I'm assuming. So,
yeah, definitely not a part of dinosaurs I want to think about.
No, I mean, look, even though I have all this paleontological knowledge, whatever, I'm not a paleontologist, I'm just a really hardcore fan of dinosaurs, and so I'm not a scientist in any way, so in terms of dinosaur copulation, not interested in figuring out more.
Especially on my end, because I'm quite prudish.
Although, I've had several people, like a friend of the show and often guest co-host Lexi, has asked me, do male dinosaurs have penises? I'm like, I don't know, and hopefully I never find out.
That's a good question, actually, and I don't want to find out either, because I'm pretty sure most birds don't.
Ducks do. Ducks have those weird corkscrew penises.
Ew.
Yeah, there's your fun fact. Ducks have a corkscrew penis.
I guess that gives people an excuse to have a corkscrew bottle opener that's got Donald Duck on the top.
I was going to say, Donald Duck, you should wear pants if you got a corkscrew penis just flopping about now. They often, they like whales do, they keep it within like a little flap that they only comes out when they need to. So, anyways, let's rate Diplodocus 1 out of 65 million.
You go first.
56 million. It's pretty cool. The fact that it could rear up is pretty cool. Like, they even call it like the tripod stance because it used to, that's when its tail would, it wouldn't be dragging on the ground, but it'd be kind of acting as a balancing sort of thing.
Ah, yep. That's so cool. I'll probably rate it like 45 million or something, like, because it's up there, but at the end of the day, it's just a sauropod.
Perfect, perfect creature to put artillery on the back of, aka my Megazoic books. Like,
just, or Peril World.
Yeah, or Peril World. Perfect one to have, like, a thing where a bunch of archers fire from it, like the Oliphants in Lord of the Rings. So,
it's a thing, doesn't one of the civilizations have a unit in that? Because I can't play it anymore, obviously.
No, but one can. It's very incompatible with I think I have a version of it that sort of works, but just barely, and have to do a lot of compatibility stuff. And it is a pirated version because, again, it's abandonware. So it's abandonware. Yeah. Like, it's that
but
gray
Sunflowers
area.
Went under, after all.
Yeah, exactly. But no, like, I think they had the civilization, the dragon clan. Their Titan unit was the Seismo destroyer or something. So that technically would be a Diplodocus.
Doubled as a resource harvester, too.
Oh, that's right, it was. Oh, there were some really fun ideas in that. Not even just with dinosaurs, but just gameplay-wise.
The Yami controller thing on the side is actually a good idea. Unfortunately, it wasn't flexible enough. Like, you could only hit, like, you had the fixed pop cap, and then the amount of ranked units were determined by the slot, so you could only have one level 5, which was usually a type of
which I guess
one
in one hand, it was kind of cool that the Yami controller would have been perfect if it was bigger. If you could have, like, 100 units rather than 50. If that would have been perfect.
And that you weren't locked for the amount on each rank, so to speak, like, if the game could...
Or
if you were,
it was the locked, like, rather than just one super one, you have, like, 5, and, like, 10, and then 50, and then, yeah. So,
yeah, pretty much.
All right, well, all right, that's it for this week. If you want to get the whole show, you can contact me at mattd@mathodoncreator.com. For any of the general questions to any of the co-hosts, you can find me on social media at mathodoncreator on Facebook and Mathodon64 everywhere else. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, that sort of thing. Like I said, I have some books, one of which was Megazoic, available for print and Kindle. Surely, I think one of the juggernauts be at the Plucus, I think. I don't know. I know I had a Minkysaurus. Why do I never know what dinosaurs I used in my own damn books? This is my own fault, because I did the thing where, like, hey, since I'm autistic and I like the variety and I want everyone to learn different species, every character and every background character is going to be a different species. That won't be confusing to modern audiences at all. And so I forget.
You shut yourself in the foot.
I did, but look, on one hand, I don't regret it because it's like, oh, that's cool. Then therefore, there was all these different species I could use to introduce people to a lot of things. But on the other hand, it means I don't, and except for the main characters, I don't remember what any of the species are, any of the background characters I use. Hold on, let me go into my Megazoic thing here. Oh, I just use it in a metaphor. Maybe they had a shot. It would still be a long shot. A shot longer than 3 Diplodocus from Blinky's sniper rifle that no doubt hadn't hit its proper target in years. So there we go. That was when I used Diplodocus in my books. As a metaphor.
Stay on target.
Alright, also Teslamancer, the sequel to my book Teslanauts, my non-dinosaur related book, except for the sequel Teslamancer, which will come out early 2024. That one's going to have, not Diplodocus, but some dinosaurs, maybe a Diplodocus, probably more likely a Brontosaurus, so.
Indeedy.
Anyways, that's it for this week. Say at the end of every episode of Paleobites, whatever it is you just said. Dippy!